to do put a copyright notice in your programs that is displayed on the screen.
Well, we certainly...
The approach is that because programs are not, in fact, protected by the copyright law in magnetic media, I was wondering about your particular approach to it, your recommendations, the National Commission on New... what is the title?
CONTU,
right, you know about it, okay, good. Has recommended that, and legislation hasn't been introduced yet on the question.
But there's nothing that says that it either is and isn't, unless you take data cache versus JSNA as a final determination of the question. There's no answer to whether magnetic media is presently protected by the copyright laws.
Well, on the Section 117 specifically excludes from...
No, it does not. It says that this law... The new copyright law does not change in any way the degree to which the copyright laws cover such items. It leaves it totally open. There's nothing that explicitly, unless I'm mistaken, that closes that question.
One of the points of CONTU was because it did in fact exclude that. That was what the commission was trying to approach and trying to get at revisions of the law, which would definitely include such things, including ROMs and other matters which are not currently covered by the law because of the format.
I was involved in the CONTU thing, and let me explain what I understand about that. Specifically in the new copyright law, there's a section that says, this law is not intended to change in any way the degree to which this copyright laws cover ROMs, magnetic media, diskettes, and other forms of software programs. And the Congress will appoint a commission to look into this issue. We're not changing it in any way, shape, or form. So CONTU comes directly from that provision. Okay, and they're supposed to recommend to Congress how to treat those things explicitly. But there's never been a statement of any kind that says that the copyright laws don't cover magnetic media. There's now data cache versus JSNA, which says that it's not it's in machine readable form only, and therefore wouldn't be subject to a copyright. If that's the way you read data cache versus JSNA, it's an Illinois District Court decision that has a lot of people very upset. But there's certain, as far as I'm aware, there's nothing that eliminates that. I mean, every manufacturer on digital equipment puts copyright notices on, we put copyright notices on. Also, on most of our software packages, we require a non-disclosure agreement from the user before they...
Right, that is an agreement of another nature. However, a person obtaining a copy of yours outside of the agreement through any source... now, again, you're interpreting it apparently in a... point of view different from that taken by the commission, because the commission, specifically Hersey's dissent.
What about Hersey's dissent? Something I spent a lot of time on.
Oh, he did. Yeah, I had written to him recently and got a letter from him, and he specifically analogizes it to the actions of cams and other devices.
That's what he thinks.
Yes, indeed.
Hersey was just way off in left field as far as the commission's concerned. I mean, he takes this thing that we're dehumanizing society by protecting our work, you know, that everybody should be, if somehow people can steal mechanistic things, then society is a little more human.
It seemed to me that Hersey's point was I didn't agree with him, mostly from the viewpoint of he seemed to be trying to protect the works of the traditional author as he viewed them. And as I myself write an extensive machine language programming, do a lot of that, and sort of resented that point of view personally. But it seemed to me, again, I'm going from the point of view that the commission would not have been necessary if the law was clear enough to cover those sorts of things, the format.
Well, it's not clear at all, and
the
commission was set up specifically by that provision in the law. I mean, I'm talking about... I can go get my file on all this stuff, which is about 8 inches thick, and read to you that portion of the law.
Yeah, well, I have that in front of me at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
It does not say that the copyright laws do not cover magnetic media.
The copyright laws do cover magnetic media, but not computer programming magnetic media.
No, it doesn't say that either.
Okay, well, what I'm looking for is not a discussion of that so much as your opinion of the current situation in regard to this. How do you feel about it, or do you?
Well, we spend millions of dollars a year creating software programs, and we are protecting those in several ways. There's the trade secret laws where we get non-disclosures, and that's certainly how we handle our source codes and our so-called commercial packages that are high priced. But for our low-cost software, we simply can't do that. Like the things that we have a consumer products division that sells products selling for less than $100.
Right.
Can't afford to go out and get non-disclosures on those things, and so we rely on the copyright law.
Now, you haven't had an occasion to test the law. Your organization specifically.
There is no case testing the law unless you consider data cache versus DSNA such a case. Everybody relies on unfair competition laws, which are just fine. If you have somebody going out using your work and selling it, then the unfair competition laws come in. Or there's laws, for instance, in the state of California that were enacted to protect cassette tape ripoff, and those have been used. And unfair trade practices have been used. But as far as the copyright law, no, nobody's ever.
What about modifications, minor modifications to programs and reorganization and then reissuance? How do you feel about that? There are rumors, which you probably have more reliable information on, about the copies of machines like the TRS-82 appear using essentially your writing of level 2. How do you feel about the minor rewrite of all of your work? And how would you, do you think you would approach that if such a machine were in fact to appear?
Well, you must be talking about the EACA machine, which is a Hong Kong company that's come in and licensed our BASIC.
They have licensed it from you.
Certainly.
Okay. I was not aware.
They did license the BASIC. I mean, the unfair trade laws protect us there 100%. You know, that has nothing to do with this copyright thing. There you have somebody who's using another person's work.
How can it be proven that it is in fact your work?
How can it be proven it's my work? I'll get, you know, any number of experts to testify it's my work. It's quite simple. That's proof in a court of law.
What evidence is there within the context of the work that you consider enough evidence? In other words, we're dealing with a group of machine instructions, which could be, like a bibliography, could be also arranged in an order that would produce a certain series of effects. What is distinctive?
You're talking about a thing that is 16,000 instructions with 256 possibilities for each one. I can certainly prove that it's derived from my work, that it's derived from my work. It's just like any sort of plagiarism where, you know, you can modify musical tunes. There's nothing novel about this.
In other words,
so if you change the page numbers on a book, or if you translate a book, or if you rip off somebody's musical tune, the court has to determine, was it in fact borrowing from the previous work? And in the case of software, they'd rely on expert testimony.
In other words, from your point of view, there's nothing difficult at all about the question.
Well, you have to have somebody camouflage the thing extremely well. That's a question of fact, not of law. The question is, did they borrow from my work? Okay. Assume that I could prove that.
All right. That
I could convince the court they borrowed from my work. Then you have a question of law. What's the law going to do about that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When somebody's commercializing a machine based on my product and earning money from it, that's unfair competition. When they haven't licensed it for me. That's ignoring the copyright laws. The thing the copyright laws are really necessary for is where you have people exchanging the software essentially on a free basis with each other, say, inside a computer club.
Uh-huh, okay.
Or, you know, people Xeroxing things or taking videotaping things. That's when the copyright laws have to come in and say, is this a legitimate use?
Or if someone were merely to take your material and, from their point of view, a gesture of humanitarianism to users who couldn't afford it, to give it away to them.
Yeah, just like you go to a bank and as a gesture of humanitarianism, you take their money and you give it away.
Yeah.
That's a gesture of humanitarianism.
Yeah. Right, you know, yes, indeed.
In society, we don't need to pay if something's expensive to develop. and somebody's not going to get paid, it won't get developed. So you decide, do you want software to be written or not?
Okay, in such a situation, how would you approach it if, say, a major computer club like a Cleveland group or a Chicago group decided that they had had it with paying what they considered a high price and just start giving away your material publicly? How would you approach that?
Well, they put software companies out of business. Okay. If the law wasn't going to protect it, there wouldn't be any software written. I mean, it's just like if somebody's... What would an author do if somebody started giving away their book or anything?
There's a clear protection.
Take them to court and see if the courts are willing to protect the work that we've done.
Okay. Do you think you'd be successful?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you got to realize the courts are basically looking for equity solutions. And when you have somebody creating a work and putting a lot of effort into that, and you have somebody else who's giving it away, the court is looking for the equity of the situation.
What piece of law would they base that on?
Oh, they generally use unfair trade practices, unfair competition.
And neither of those cases are legitimate here because there's no profit being made.
It's things like the AP Wire where there were people giving away AP Wire stuff. AP Wire can't be copyrighted because it's simply news material.
Uh-huh.
And I forget how they handled it in that case. But they probably look into state law to see what they could get. I mean, you know, if you have somebody running advertisements and distributing media, they're probably going to have to charge some money, in which case you can definitely get all those laws into play. Also, if it's something we require non-disclosure for, which is true of most of our packages, everything but super law and stuff, consumer product stuff, like typing to them.
Well, if you
certainly got a trade secret case.
Once you've gotten past the first step of non-disclosure, you may have a case against the initial person. However,
if the trade secret's released, the people who are taking advantage of that trade secret are subject to penalty. It's not like you can just go in and rip someone off, and if they can't figure out who it is, you can use the thing freely. That's not the way trade secrets work.
If that's the case, then why do you license it?
I can get coverage under the trade secret law.
Okay, I think I'm looking for a conflict there somehow.
You don't get trade secret protection unless you have a specific agreement with the party not to disclose.
Okay, and if
once you have that, you can prove it's a trade secret. Anybody who's using it.
Even those with whom you do not have a specific agreement.
That's right. It's a trade secret. You prove that the thing has never been published and you've covered it under those agreements. And then anybody who's benefiting by it can suffer. Otherwise, this thing is so ludicrous. So what do you think the trade secret, what good would the trade secret laws be?
In the trade secret laws, as I had understood them, that was a generally material which was not accessible. The process
is not accessible except for non-disclosure. That's what trade secrets are for.
No, that's not what I was saying. I was saying that the material, the process of operation, or one aspect of it was not discernible.
Not discernible.
And that it required some covert act to obtain the balance of the information. In the case of your code, the code is all present. There is no secret beyond that.
I really don't know what you're saying at all. Our code is the trade secret, okay? And people who...
But you're giving it away.
No, we're not giving it away. We're selling it. Just like Coca-Cola,
yeah.
The bottling companies make Coke, okay? Or the overseas affiliates make the syrup, okay? They license it to those people. Those are just like people signing our non-disclosure. Or, you know, Dow Chemical has a process for making ethylene. They license it to people. It's a trade secret. Those people who have that process... pay.
That's right. Yeah.
They've signed a non-disclosure, just like people who receive our software sign a non-disclosure. Okay?
And if the material is taken, modified, so it's still structurally similar, and then given away at that point, do you think that has been clarified?
Absolutely. I mean, when you're talking about a chemical process, what is an exact duplicate chemical process? There have been plenty of cases where you come in and you have a question of fact. Did somebody help you? Did they use proprietary information of this company to come up with this process? And that's a question of fact. You have experts come in. And once again, you got to separate these things out. Don't confuse questions of fact with questions of law. First you decide if you've used somebody else's work. Then you decide if the law protects it. If it's a trade secret, they've received non-disclosures, fine, the law protects it.
Why then was the commission necessary?
Because there are certain things that are not suitable for covering covering with trade secret protection. You don't want to go out for every $14 piece of software you sell and get a non-disclosure agreement from the guy. That's bad news. Okay? You don't want to, when you sell a TRS-80, have to have the guy sign a non-disclosure agreement that he won't screw with the ROM. Okay? For things you're going to have widespread distribution, the copyright laws are certainly more appropriate. And yet, the copyright laws, there's nothing clear in them about how they would handle something that's not human readable. It's not clear that they don't. I mean, certainly when you have tape, everything in a form is human readable. Just like, you could disassemble binary bits, or you can take a magnetic tape with voice on it and play it back to a recorder. And certainly cassette tape was protected.
Okay.
That's a matter of degree, so.
Okay.
Yeah, they wanted to set up some procedures, some clear boundaries of what was and wasn't protected, because nobody's willing to pay the cost. I mean, I couldn't afford that kind of pioneering effort, taking something like that to the Supreme Court. I'd be out of business.
What would you favor, then, the specific extension of the copyright law in specific language to cover?
Making it clear that the copyright law is covered, yes.
Yeah, you would. Okay.
Not an extension. It is not an extension.
Well, some people do feel that it is.
Who?
And Hersey is pretty clear that he does feel that way. So it's not a matter of unanimous
Does he have a court decision or something interpreting the law? Or is there some provision in the law? I mean, look at the thing which Commission Contu to start out with. Okay, I can go pull it out. It doesn't say that the laws don't cover these things. It says that they've been asked to come up with a clear position clarifying the exact procedure. And in particular in the case of databases, there are some tough questions. Contu had a very broad scope.
Then why, as of 4 weeks ago, had the Copyright Office not accepted any software and magnetic media for copyright?
Well, it doesn't really matter. I mean, when cassette tapes come in, they actually deliver them. They don't deliver a cassette tape on the thing. They deliver a musical sheet rendition or something like that.
Not talking about the printed version, which is acceptable. The magnetic version, which is not.
Are you telling me the cassette tape's not protected?
No, I didn't say music. I was talking about a computer program on cassette tape.
What's
music
the
is specifically protected by the law.
Why? It's not in human readable form. It's on a cassette.
Well, I'm not asking for an interpretation. I'm stating as of 4 weeks ago, they had not yet accepted that. If the law, to your mind, makes them acceptable, why is the Copyright Office, the Registrar of Copyright, still refused to accept magnetic media and ROM?
This is for the same reason they don't take music cassettes. They want to see the thing in the machine.
No, they do take music
cassettes. In the most machine readable.
It's the phonogram copyright, and it does, in fact, copyright the musical version.
Well, they want to see the thing in the most human readable form, so people have submitted tons and tons of source codes to the thing, to the Copyright Office. Received copyright registration. Just like in the data cache versus JSNA.
The office is specifically including magnetic media, and they still continue to. I want you to address that question, if you would. The question of magnetic media. You have said the law does protect the programs, and the specific question of the law was whether it protected them in magnetic media and in ROMs, and whenever it was in the machine.
But why is the media is not really an issue, except for the
media,
Copyright Office
wants
to see something they can understand.
The media
computers,
is
computer programs that make media, kinetic media, they have a hard time knowing what they're copyrighting. They have no way of comparing things or doing a search or anything of that nature. So they're really unequipped for it. Okay, and they want a clear mandate that they should be equipped for that, and then they'll go out and spend a bunch of money. So they want it, right now they want to see the thing in listing form.
And as contrasted with recorded discs and tapes, the magnetic media and the ROMs, they are still refusing to accept. So you favor this extension. This is what I was trying to get at. It is, in fact, from the Copyright Office's point of view, an extension of the current law.
Well, what the Copyright Office does, you know, they should be equipped to accept it in that form, or we can certainly deliver it to them in other forms. Like initially, they aren't equipped to receive video material in DTR form. Or they're not equipped to receive it in whatever, you know, video disc form yet, but they definitely should get it set up to do that.
But it's definitely copyrightable under the phonogram copyright in magnetic media, as long as it's not a digitally rendered piece of information, which they are not accepting.
I'm sorry?
Which, as I say, the digital program they are not accepting yet. They are accepting, by contrast, a digital recording of audio material. That is an interesting contrast. I had asked them of that, and they said, yes, they are accepting digital masters, but they are not accepting computer programs.
But what if I put my source code on there?
Yes.
I put the characters in a perfectly human-readable form. They'll accept that.
They will not.
No, the problem is object code versus source code.
The problem is a machine-readable code.
Well, wait a minute. A VTR is a machine. A cassette tape is a machine.
They have made the differentiation. I haven't made it. They have apparently made it.
Okay, in the sense that the only machine connects to it, yeah. They have not accepted object codes for copyright, as far as I'm aware. Well,
they,
I know
they have not. That's
correct. I know some people have sent in paper tape object codes and they weren't rejected, but that doesn't really prove anything that they have it sitting in their vault.
If they issue the copyright certificate for that piece of material in that form, which they have not done. They have issued it for listings, they've issued it for other forms, but not that which sits in either of those two. And I was trying to get at that. Would you like to make any generalized comments about your experiences with your smaller software and the violation of any rights that you see that you have there? Your smaller pieces, the less than $100 that you were talking about earlier.
Well, there's just, you know, people, when it's more convenient to get it from your friend than it is to go out and buy the thing, both from a cost and just speed of delivery point of view, there's a great temptation to copy it, and that does take place. Fortunately, there's a great number of people who are honest enough or realize the effect of that type of stuff who come and purchase the package. And, you know, as That's really what determines whether people will come up with software packages.
Would you like to address some comments to generalized public as the, I would say, probably the acknowledged leader of the microcomputer software industry?
Well, this whole rip-off issue, unfortunately, gets portrayed as something totally different than what it is. It's simply a matter of not manufacturers trying to rip anybody off or anything like that. There's nobody getting rich writing software that I know of. There are people who would like to stay in business and earn a salary writing packages for these low-cost computers. But, and every time somebody comes up with a scheme for making it difficult to protect, there's a great deal of unhappiness expressed on the part of the users because they want to be able to make the duplicate copy.
Yeah, absolutely. I sympathize with that from my point of view. I have ruined enough of my original copies of things because I'm terribly clumsy about such things.
There's too many people out there who are willing to just exchange the stuff are willing to go to a club meeting and see that stuff being done without speaking out against it.
Absolutely. I have I've received in a survey that I was doing of users from my own personal mailing list, a photocopied list of over 120 pieces of commercial software that one individual was trading, offering for trade, most of which he had gotten in trade. And I was really unhappy about that. I'm trying to be objective about my point of view on the article, but I nearly hit the ceiling when I saw it. I said to myself, what do I write to this guy? What do I say to this guy to say, would you stop? Maybe it doesn't seem like a big deal, but you've got 120 programs, and some of them are phenomenally big programs that the authors who sweated their asses off for this thing have not seen any compensation for. But it's pretty extensive. I don't know how much of it you see. You probably see a lot of it, but maybe people are wary. I'm telling you, but it's tremendously extensive.
There's a great deal of it. I mean, looking at the thing, with the amount of software we offer, we are the most ripped-off company around in this respect. It's because we offer a broad range, and we try to offer it for these low-cost computers.
Absolutely, and there's probably where you're getting a great portion of your loss.
And, we view this thing totally as an experiment. If there isn't enough, there aren't enough honest people out there to buy this stuff, we'll end it. And we won't, at least most of our packages, we won't put down at the low end.
Okay. Your experiment has been successful so far, I take it, from something you said earlier. You felt that there are enough honest people out there.
Yeah, I really think there are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not overwhelmingly successful, but it's at an acceptable level where, as the base of personal computer users grow and we come up with, I think people have a growing awareness that it's just taking someone else's work is not the appropriate way to handle.
As a related question, you can tell me to stop at any time as it gets toward, maybe it's past your lunch hour, but it's just one related question, and let me make my final one. We've heard a lot of feedback from readers about wishing that Microsoft or in Radio Shack in this particular case could possibly make available a lot of detail about the ROM. People feel helpless trying to take it apart bit by bit, spending months doing that so that they can essentially write a simple routine to patch into it for their own use. How do you feel about the obligation one reader particularly expressed that the more details should be made available about particularly large-scale works like Level 2 ROM?
Well, if there's a problem with the Level 2 ROM, people can work with Radio Shack. They have their own support people.
Well, Radio Shack apparently doesn't know very much about it or is not willing to talk about it. They have not.
Well, the Level 2 ROM operates as documented in the manual, and they're perfectly willing to talk about that. As far as, whether PMOS was used and whether the third layer of the Z80 chip has a...
Well, I'm talking about the software specifically. I mean, your
But why is, why is that an area of such interest? Why don't they demand that the circuit diagrams for the Z80 chip be included? All that stuff be documented. I mean, they bought the box for one function, and the price was set to support them. And
maybe they didn't buy the box for one function.
So if they bought it to get the source code of the ROM, then they just... Somebody led them.
Don't misapprehend my question. I'm saying that there are a lot of places, and I myself have had the difficulty of wanting to perform a certain transparent function that I could use all the time for my particular orientation, which is as a composer, and I need some special activities which I would like to patch into place. It's taken me an extraordinary amount of time to find how those patch points operated, the timings of them, etc., for my own use. I do not have... personally, the cash to go out and buy a $10,000 controller. I needed an inexpensive machine onto which I could expand with my main interest, which is composition, which is not computer hardware.
Okay, but a great deal of information about that ROM has been made available.
Through what sources?
Through Radio Shack. I mean, they tell you certain things. about the entry points and what the device drivers are. Beyond that, I mean, do you know what kind of support burden you create by trying to explain to everybody what's in that ROM?
Well,
not to mention the fact that that ROM is exactly what what's the source code that's in there is what keeps us in business.
It's true, but do you see it as likely that someone is going to copy that when it is so inexpensive?
To copy the ROM?
Yeah.
It's inexpensive to copy the ROM.
But what I'm saying is so inexpensive for the device as a whole. Nobody's going to build a TRS-80 from the ground up.
That's true. Well, if they want to know every last bit and byte in the thing, and for some reason, which I guess
the reasons I'm trying to express is I have found three or four routines which I found essential to my use, and it took me a long time to find out how the various interpreter sections work so that I could patch it in completely transparently, do other things, and go into it without having to completely bypass it to not use it at all. A lot of the convenience functions I wanted, but I didn't. But there were a lot of things that it didn't have. I wanted to add to it. A lot of people have expressed that to me. Why aren't the patch points that whole virtually page of patch points explained?
Well, the reason
that kind of support.
We put some flexibility into the ROM, which isn't documented at all, and which is not sold as a feature on the thing. And Radio Shack doesn't have the expertise or the money to go out and explain to their users how to work with that stuff at a machine language level. The support burden would just be unbelievable. I mean, they virtually have to hire experts to answer the phone and spend hours educating people about machine language, about the stack, about interrupts, about how it works together, about the problems with the hardware interface, and explain it to me and my 8-year-old son.
Uh-huh.
You know, I assume they're not offering the same type of support that Radio Shack would on the thing, fixing mistakes and coming up with versions,
fixing
the thing. And,
okay.
And also somehow the fact that you have to go and buy the thing and, from a club or something like that, it's very clear what the rules of use are.
Uh-huh.
And I don't see why Radio Shack should do that. Do you think a lot more people would buy the computer or that they misrepresented the computer?
No, I don't think anyone said that. I think people are anxious and very anxious for additional information about what they have. You can order, for example, a manual, a repair and service manual
in
detail.
Yeah, the hardware level has done a good job.
No. I mean, for an automobile, for example, you can order a detailed manual about all the aspects of it, how to tune it up and keep it in good operating condition. But you cannot, in a sense that...
Mostly from, yeah, that's true. There is a thing called TRS-80 Technical Manual.
Yeah, I have that.
From a hardware point of view.
That's from a hardware point of view, yeah.
Well, the software's just...
But there's no software technical manual, if you understand what I mean.
Now, there's two issues there. One is the complexity of it, and two is the issue of protecting what we own and what we do business with.
Okay. Yes, you...
I think, you know, there's a gap there. More information should be made available by Radio Shack, and they would have to come to me and say, is this too much? Because the way our contract works, they can't really release anything without my permission.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
There's a certain amount that could be... It would aid people in their use of the ROM without threatening my proprietary rights.
Uh-huh.
The Radio Shack's emphasis was to do a good job supporting hobbyist-type users.
Mm-hmm.
Our people who are interested in doing those things. They do that. They go out and write a book. As it is, the people who are doing the things have to be careful because they spread the line of violating my copyright, like Pennington's coming out with his thing. He's just
uh-huh. putting comments
in.
Right. There's a TRS, I don't know if you've seen it, the TRS-80 Disassembled Handbook, which is a piece of work in which the person has deciphered a large number of your subroutine calls and provides virtually all of your code in hex with the exception of a few bytes, which he says he's taken out to make sure that the person bought the product. How do you react to something like that?
You've got our code in hex?
Your entire code in hex, less maybe about 24 bytes that he took out specifically to say that he didn't want to violate your rights by providing the whole code.
Well, he certainly violated our rights.
Okay. There's, if you're interested, there's a review of it in the upcoming issue of AD Microcomputing, and it has the address you might want to talk to him, because he feels he has not.
Certainly he has. I mean, that's my material. Who does he think it is? Does he think he has the right to commercially profit by republishing something that we created?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, that's ludicrous. You know, why should he be making money from that? All he did was take our stuff.
Okay, in the level of your support, then, do you feel that giving detailed information about what you've done violates your rights?
No.
Okay.
No, it's
how detailed
like this thing with Pennington where he gives comments. That doesn't violate my rights. Because he didn't include any portion of the ROM itself.
Uh-huh.
It's, you know, it kind of encourages people to run the disassembler, and as long as they use it for their personal use, okay, that's fair use. But it might make it easier for somebody who has something bad in mind, but that's fine. What Pennington has done is okay. But if this guy actually included the contents of the ROM in his book, he's crossed the line. That's our material.
Okay. I would be interested in if you had something if you had any contact with him, I would very much be interested in hearing something further on that, because I thought that it was a little out of line personally.
Okay, I have to go.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. The article should appear to be the cover story, as a matter of fact, in August, as I understand it. Okay?
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye.